Last week, I made a comparison between the Christie re-election campaign with the GWB scandal and Richard Nixon's 72 re-election campaign with Watergate. My point was that both are on easy paths to victory, so why do what they did? As we await answers about the first, my next guest is here with answers to the second. His new book lays before you some dirty little secrets, which back in the day would have formed an apocalyptic mushroom cloud over Washington. His book is White House Call Girl, The Real Watergate Story. He's been a columnist and has had his work featured in outlets including Rolling Stone, New York Times Magazine, Washington Post Magazine. We say good morning to Phil Stanford. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Chris.
Let me give you a website too. You can get Phil's book, learn more about White House Call Girl and his other books at ptownbooks.com. That's ptownbooks.com. And I guess the best starting point, Phil, is who was Heidi Reichen?
Well, Heidi Reichen is the woman behind the real reason for the Watergate break-in that they've been trying to avoid. Everyone in Washington has been trying to avoid looking at for all this time now, almost 30 years or so, 40 years.
And anyone who has gotten close, I mean, I know there was a book back in 1991, I forget the name of it now, but
Silent Coup.
Yeah, they had the scent, but they got lost on the path, and what they thought they had and what they missed were two different things. And you picked up what they missed, thankfully for that. And there was a lawyer named Philip Bailey who was knew a lot, tried to reveal a lot, and he got locked up in the loony bin pretty much.
Phil Bailey at the time was a foolish 30-year-old lawyer who was obsessed with sex, and he got hooked up with this high-priced call girl ring, which was the answer to all his biggest dreams. His next seminarian who'd dropped out and gone to law school, and he was a little bit nutty on the subject of sex. Anyway, he got hooked up with Heidi. And he thought that he was Heidi's lawyer. Heidi was actually paying him off to tip her off on what the Vice Squad was doing. He regularly tipped off the Vice Squad anyway. He was representing prostitutes. So he got tangled up with this thing. And when he got in some trouble, the FBI raided him, got his address books, and there was Heidi's name. There was Mo Biner's name. That was her girlfriend's name. Best girlfriend name, she was the girlfriend of the White House counsel, John Dean. The whole thing had to be suppressed, and it was. They took him off the streets, this practicing lawyer, threw him in St. Elizabeth's, the insane asylum for Washington, D.C., in the ward for the criminally insane, and broke him and got him to confess to things he didn't do.
You know, I'm reading a book, too, with Heidi's story and her business. It's important to mention and include, too, that Heidi's call girl operation was an operation for the mob because it helps us realize, you know, just how much of a grip the mob had in the world of politics in so many ways.
Yeah, that's an important aspect of the book. And it emerges... Because I take the first really hard look at Heidi, this mystery figure that people on the other side of the question have even tried to deny the reality of. But she was the mob's girl. She started as a stripper, but she couldn't dance very well. Her own girlfriend have said that. So they put her to work for the gamblers. I mean, a big-time business in Washington, D.C. and elsewhere. Joe Nesline was the top guy running the football betting, and they put her to work meeting football players. I got her little black book, which is the reason I was able to take this step forward in White House Call Girl. And among the names there, you'll recognize, if you know anything about football back in that time, 70s, 60s and 70s, you'll recognize lots of stars of the Redskins, Green Bay Packers, New Orleans Saints, Dallas Cowboys. They used her to get close to them to find out about injuries, to find out about their state of mind, and who knows, maybe to grease a bribe here and there, because the mob is certainly not above that.
Talking with Phil Stanford, his new book, White House Call Girl, The Real Watergate Story. Find out more about this and Phil's other books at ptownbooks.com, ptownbooks.com, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. So obviously I don't want to tip the hat too much here because I want people to read and get the full story out of White House Call Girl, but my understanding is that, you know, much like when you go after the mob, you try to connect one person to the next, to the next, to the next, and you wind up with the head of the snake, so to speak. And did certain people not want to know who knew who?
In regard to the break-in now you're asking about that?
Yeah.
What actually happened is that Heidi was operating a sexual blackmail operation for the mob, which was doing it for the CIA. It was a couple blocks down from the Watergate apartment office complex, which is where the Democratic National Committee offices were located. And a particularly ambitious aide in the White House, who was interested in running intelligence activities of his own, got wind of that, undoubtedly through his girlfriend, who was Heidi's best friend. And there was a break-in at the DNC. Actually, there were two of them. They got caught on the second one. It's my theory that what actually happened here was two intelligence agencies, the White House Intelligence Agency, White House intelligence team and the CIA's own operation crossed their wires, and in the end, the CIA people who had infiltrated the White House operation, I know it all sounds pretty crazy or at least pretty complicated, had to sabotage it, and they got arrested. But there had to be a huge cover-up, yes. And the cover-up has been perpetuated with some well-meaning journalism and some not so well-meaning. But the central myth, of course, is the movie All the President's Men, and it is a bit of a myth because they completely avoid the question of what the break-in was about.
Yeah, pretty much Woodward and Bernstein went after the what happened. They didn't go after the why that happened.
Right. It's the story of the unraveling of the cover-up. Yes, there was certainly a cover-up, and they're important. Their reporting was important in that regard, but they, like the Watergate prosecutor and the Watergate Special Committee themselves, they had to avoid the question of what really caused the break-in. The prevailing explanation is that they were looking for information about Larry O'Brien, his connection to Howard Hughes. Larry O'Brien was a political operative who was head of the Democratic National Committee at the time, offices in the Watergate. But in fact, when the burglars were arrested, they were nowhere close to O'Brien's office. In fact, their equipment was set up on the desk of the secretary who, evidence indicates, was the one who was sending clients to the White House call girl operation two blocks down the street.
Right, we're talking with Phil Stanford, his new book, White House Call Girl, The Real Watergate Story, ptownbooks.com. On the web, and you were listening to Issues and Ideas. When someone writes as you write, in obviously digging in and certainly nonfiction, I always say the more you're threatened with lawsuits, the closer you must be getting to the truth.
I think that's probably a pretty good rule of thumb. In fact, before our book even came up, we got a long 5-page rant from John Dean, who's the White House aide I've been referring to, who most likely arranged for the break-in in the first place, but certainly from day one was running the cover-up in the White House until it became obvious that the cover-up wasn't going to work, and he was the first guy to get to the prosecutors and cut a deal for himself. Before our book was even published, he sent a letter threatening to sue and reminding everyone that he'd sued before and had run up $15 million in bills for the insurance companies for the publisher. Our publisher, Adam Parfrey, at Farrell House Books, got the letter, asked me what it was all about, we talked about it. And he said, "Hell with him. We're gonna we're coming out with a book, and what's more, we're gonna bill it as the book that John Dean tried to suppress." So that was his answer, and we're still waiting to hear from him.
And we're not going to tell you why John Dean wanted to sue, but when you read White House Call Girl, the real Watergate story, you'll understand why the book is an uncomfort zone for the Dean family. And, well, you know, when truth is painful to some, and it's a benefit, fortunately, for the majority. And what Phil has done with White House Call Girl, the real Watergate story, is without fear, without holding back, and with material others did not have the option or the choice or the opportunity to work with, he clears up a lot of the questions and brings to the front what a lot of people wanted to leave in the back of the closet. And as far as when it comes to history, you want it as much in the front as possible, because history has value and it is there to be learned from, so it cannot and will not be repeated in most cases. Sometimes you want to repeat it, but in this case, the real Watergate story, it provides a lot of insight to where we were and who was doing what and who knew who, when they knew who. And it really does, it will change your image and your view and your ideas of what that era of politics was all about. You can find out more about White House Call Girl, the real Watergate story, and all of Phil's books at ptownbooks.com. Phil Stanford, thanks so much for being here this morning.
Thank you, Chris.